We've been focusing on the last couple of shiurim about the importance of pesak halacha. Particularly focusing on the importance of the posek. What are the qualifications of a posek? What are some of the limitations of a posek? We spoke a little bit at the end of the shiur yesterday. What exactly is considered to be a pesach? When is a posek actually pasking a shaila? When is it something which is so basic and elementary that it's not even considered to be a pesach altogether? I want to just to finish up in terms of discussing the role of the posek per se. In terms of the significance of psach, in the sense that we want to make sure that the psach is an authentic psach. We want to make sure that the mesorah is kept intact. We don't want the chas v'shalom, there should be any corruption of the mesorah process. Since the area of psach halacha is really, in a sense, the ultimate teshuv ha'peh, to be able to relate to how to a person to be knowing in a midah yom yom. So it's so critical that we're so 100% certain that there's nothing nothing artificial taking place. There's nothing which is perhaps distilling the authenticity of the psach. What I mean is as follows: that there are certain halachas that appear in hilchos psach halacha in the area of paskin and shailas that are the thrust of these halachas are really to make sure that nothing goes wrong in the area of psach halacha. One of the halachas that I'm referring to is something that we already alluded to a little bit yesterday when we learned the sugya a little bit about Mori Halacha B'Fnei Rava. We mentioned one possible interpretation of the chait of the Bnei Aaron. Part of the reason why they went astray was because they were Mori Halacha B'Fnei Rava. The Gemara actually tells us in Ksubis, as we mentioned yesterday, that lo yistayeh milsa, if a person is Mori Halacha B'Fnei Rava, they're not going to receive the siyata d'shmaya to pass him properly. The Gemara tells us that there was another mistake that Bnei Aaron did. The Gemara says that they were nichnasu shtuyei ayin lemikdash, that they went into the Beis HaMikdash in a state of having drunk a little bit, they drank a little bit too much wine, and they went and did the avoda in a state of frivolous, in a state of drunkenness, and that also contributed to their tragic punishment. How did Chazal know that they violated this issur of doing avoda in the state of being shtuyei ayin? Because the halachas of shtuyei ayin appear in the Chumash immediately after that. It's right after the story of the death of Bnei Aaron, so the Torah gives us the parasha of Yayin Gesheich or Alteish. You're not allowed to drink wine or other kinds of intoxicating beverages before doing the Avodah. So the Gemara, of course, speaks in very harsh terms about an individual who goes into the Beis HaMikdash after having drunk wine. And then the Gemara says, if you look carefully at the Pesukim of Asher Shemini, the Torah says not only you're not allowed to do Avodah in the state of having drunk, but Ulahiras Biyamatav Biyamatohar, that Lahabdu bin Kaddish Lachol, the Pesuk says, that anyone who's involved in Horah, even a person who's involved in Paskin and Shailas, that he murdered the Derech for Klal Yisrael, such a person is also not permitted to drink. And again, it shouldn't surprise us that there's a certain parallel between the role of a Kohen and the role of a Posek, because after all, especially in days of old, so the primary post given class were the Kohanim and the Levim. They were the ones who were in their own land, they were the ones who were close to the Beis HaMikdash, they were the ones who lived the higher spiritual existence than the rest of the people. So they were the Rabbanim, they were the Malamdim, they were the Tamichom, they were the poskim of the door. So the Torah tells us that you're not allowed to enter into the Beis HaMikdash in the state of drinking, and you're not permitted to enter into the world of Psach Halacha in this state of drinking as well. And this Halacha is still relevant for us Ad Hayom Hazeh. The Halacha says quite clearly that if a Rav just had something to drink, he's not allowed to pass Kiddush Shiloh. How much is considered to be to drink for these purposes? Shoser Revius Yayin, even if a person drinks a mere Revius, 3 ounces of koshi of wine, so we're afraid that his vision is clouded a little bit. After all, in order to pass him properly, you have to be in tip-top shape, you have to be perfect, same way the same way you wouldn't dream getting behind the wheel, hopefully even if you drank a little bit. So you shouldn't be held Paskin Shilohs in the state of having drinking as well, because even the smallest amount of alcohol has the ability to cloud a person's vision. The poskim have a whole discussion, just practically the ma'isa, how this plays out today, for the following reason. There's another halacha that you're not allowed to do if you drink. Anyone know? Besides passing and besides entering the Beis HaMikdash, there's a third halacha you're not allowed to do. Not allowed to daven. And also for the same reason, that in order to daven, a person has to be omid b'fnei ha'melech, as the Rambam defines the very essence of tefillah, is that a person is cognizant of the fact that he's standing in front of a Kodesh Baruch. That's the famous word from Reb Chaim. I think Reb Tursky spoke about this at the beginning of the song, if I'm not mistaken. I think some of you guys may have heard. Reb Chaim has a famous yeshayid, that when a person is davening, if you lose cognizance, they open their mouth. That's not a tefillah. Tefillah doesn't mean to mouth words. Tefillah means a realization, cognizance that you're standing in front of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. So therefore, the halacha is if a person is drank so much that he doesn't even, he couldn't even talk in front of a king, even if he knew he was in front of a king, he's babbling, he's mumbling, he's not coherent. So such a tefillah is tefillah of tu'eva. One is not allowed to daven under those circumstances. And even if one drinks a little bit less than that, a person really drinks revias, shas revias yayin, al yispalel. So there are more right things. Kiddush Club is also for many, 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 many reasons. That being just one of them. Right. 100%. So comes the Ramad writes that this halach of Shas Revis Yair and Bisman Hazer, our wines aren't very strong, Bisman Hazer. The wines in the days of Chazal are much more intoxicating than our wines are. Our wines are watered down, koshi, there's nothing to them. Especially some wines, you know, some people like and Pesach Mac, don't want to get too don't want to get sick from too much wine. So they drink these really, really light wines. The Kedem, what's it called, the Concord Kal or something? Ever seen it? It's 3.5% or something. It's like grape juice with a little bit of a kick to it. Does?
Huh?
What? Yeah, those are the ones I like. I don't like the heavy duty 12%. The two, it's too strong for me. The 3% is a mamasha jump, so I usually go for the middle of the ground. Anyway, so I'm not from the big drinkers, believe me. I drink a couple of wine for Kiddush, and I drink Dal Kaisers on Pesach, let's say, and a little bit of Yom Tov, and that's the extent of that. Yeah, so there are more rights that the Zman Hazeh, maybe you don't have to be as careful with the Revius of the Yayin because the wine's a little bit weaker than the one days of old. So again, there are technical details of this halacha, how much you're allowed to drink and when you're allowed to fast, etc. But the idea is clearly true. To such extent, the Gemara tells us that one of the Amoraim would never fast in Shalos and Yom Tov, because in Yom Tov he'd always have a nice meal with wine, so he would never be able to fast in Shalos and Yom Tov. So the idea being is that the Torah gives such significance to this process of Psak Halacha that we want to be so careful that there's nothing that's clouding the Pesach's vision. Therefore, even a little bit of wine is something which is off limits. In a similar vein, that there are other things that also can sometimes cloud a person's vision. The Torah tells us in Parsha Shoftim that Vishocha Losikach, you're not allowed to take bribery. A judge is not allowed to be bribed. That bribery has the ability to blind the person's eyes. Moshe Lamadav Adomin is a famous maaseh that a non-Jew approached Rav Yonatan Eibershitz. No one knows who Rav Eibershitz was. No, he was the Gedolei Hador from the what? Sorry, he's the Gedolei Hador from the 1700s. So Rav Yonatan Eibershitz once approached by his non-Jewish by a priest. He said, "You, I don't understand you Jews. You, according to your Torah, Acharav Lahatos, you have to follow the majority. So the majority of people in the world are not Jewish. The majority of people in the world are not Shem Eternitzes. You should follow us, follow our religion. We're the majority. Acharav Lahatos." That was a question that was posed to the Yonatan Eibershitz. So the Yonatan Eibershitz responded, said, "You know, I don't know if any of you guys come to the chaburas that we give before Mincha. So when do you follow Rov? What's the yisod of Rov? When you have a suffix, then you follow Rov. It's to have a piece of meat in front of me. I don't know where the meat came from. I don't know where it came from. That's thought, this thought, the other thought. When there's a latest of suffix, then the Torah says you follow Rov. What if I have a piece of meat in front of me, and it says on it, chazia. It says on it, treif, but there happen to be 90% of the stores in town sell kosher. That's very nice, but that's not a suffix. Because if I know that it's treif, so of course it's treif. So Rov is only given when you have a latest of suffix." He says, "I'm just sharply back to the priest." He said that we have no suffix that we're right. It's not that we have a suffix. We're not sure, is Judaism right or not right? Maybe no, let's try to figure out statistically, 95% of the people think Judaism is not right, so then maybe they're right. Chas v'shalom, says Rav Eibershitz. We're the Vadols, we have the Amunah Shleimah, we have the Messiah, Dorach, Hadorah, Meshur Beinu. We know that the Torah is right, we know what we're doing is the Ratzon Hashem, so we don't have the latest Asafi. There's no latest Asafi, you don't follow Rav. That was the answer of Rav Eibershitz. So comes Rav Chanan and says, I'll give you another answer, Vaeji Shleimah. First answer is a good one, but I can add another one, says Rav Chanan. The halach is, how do you know that you follow Rov? Where's the source that you follow Rov? Acharav Lahatos. What's Acharav Lahatos really talking about? What am I saying? Judge is talking about Dayanim. Two Dayanim say Chayav, one Dayan says Potter, you follow the Rov. Comes Rabbi Chanan and says, one of the criteria, one of the preconditions to be a Dayan is that you can't be a Nadal Sheikhah. You can't be somebody who takes bribes. If you take a bribe, so then you're possible to be a Dayan.
Why? Because the whole purpose of a diet is to be able to see clearly, is to be able to see and look with clarity and not to be clouded as vision with any other incentives. A person gets sheichad, he's not kosher to be a diet. Says Rabbi Chanan, only people who live a life of ruchnias, people live a life of spirituality, live a life of dveikus b'Hashem, only such individuals are shayach to vote on what's the proper derech in this world. A person who has received bribes, one of the bribes of this world, says Rabbi Chanan, tanugi olam hazeh, the pleasures and the pursuits of wealth and power and lust, all these things of this world, these are the shaykhah and these blind individuals. So you're going to go take a poll, take a survey of 100 people and ask them whether the Torah is right or not. 95% of them are possibly atheists, the possible dayanus, because they can't see straight, because they've been blinded by shaykhah, the shaykhah of olam hazeh. We're getting back to that story. If you have a real dayan who's taking literal shaykh, who's taking a bribe, so it's not shaykh from to pass in a shayla problem. It's not shaykh from to sit in the din Torah. But sometimes you have a situation where it's not shaykh in the sense of that it was actually paid off, so to speak, you know, pay under the table in order to pass in my favor. That's obviously out of the question. What if you have a situation of a dayan with no poschar wadur? That means he gets paid for his job, works 9 to 5, he gets paid for his job. So comes the Mishnah, and says Becheris, and says, Hanotos Chalodin is Dina B'Telem, you cannot be a Dayan and get paid. It's a stirum in Eibe, it's a contradiction. Not only can you not get paid to be a Dayan, you can't get paid to Paskin Shaila either. You know why you're not going to get paid to Paskin Shaila? Not that we think you're really going to lie, but the Gemara says that it's a halacha, when you mosa the Torah, when you teach the Torah to the next generation, so we have to teach the Torah to the next generation the same way we received it from our Rebbeim, and the same way our Rebbeim received it from their Rebbeim back to Moshe Rabbeinu, and the same way that Moshe Rabbeinu received it from the Rebbeim Shalom. How did Moshe Rabbeinu receive the Torah Kedoshim from the Rebbeim Shalom? How much did he have to pay for it? What was the price tag on the Torah? Says the Gemara, Ma'ani b'chinam, afatam b'chinam. Moshe Rabbeinu, zero, he didn't have to pay a penny in order to receive the Torah Kedoshim. Ma'ani b'chinam, afatam b'chinam. So comes the Gemara and says, from here we derive that a person is not permitted to charge money to say a shiur, a person is not permitted to charge money to pass in a shaila, a person is not permitted to charge money to teach Torah. So in fact, there's a whole sugya. You can ask me, I have the Rebbeim get paid, I have the Rebbeim get paid, is he this, right?
Something like that.
So comes the Gemara and says, the Dharma, the fourth parak, and has an elaborate discussion about this. The Maisa, how do you pay a Rebbe? So comes the Gemara and says, you can pay a Rebbe for one of two things. You could pay a Rebbe for what's called Tzchar Shimur. What does that mean?
Babysitting.
The third grade Rebbe, so I can tell you, if you have kids in elementary school, if the Rebbe wouldn't be sitting there, the kids would be killing each other. Forget about the Rebbe teaching Torah. The Rebbe's a good babysitter also. Hopefully he's better than just a babysitter. Hopefully he's a good Rebbe also. So comes the Gemara and says, when you pay a Rebbe, you're not paying him a Torah's Rebbe. Rebbe is Bechinam. You're paying him a Torah's babysitter. Says the Gemara, aye, sometimes you have a Rebbe who's the Tamidim are good, they're older, 20-year-olds, they don't need a Tzchar Shimur. So says the Gemara, sometimes there are parts of what you teach the Tamidim that you can charge money for, you can't take money for. What are some of those things? So the Gemara basically says, those parts of Torah that are the Rabbanim, those parts which are not part of the original Moshe Kibbutz Torah Mitzvah, that you're allowed to take money for. So whenever you say a shiur, make sure you throw in at least one din d'rabbanan, or else the Rebbe can't get paid. So the halacha is that the Rebbe gets paid for those parts. He gets paid for everything which is not the Torah part itself. That's what the Rishonim write. He can get paid for what's called tzchar batala. He can get paid for, listen, I'm not getting paid to actual saying of the shiur, but there are other things that are involved. I come to shiur every day, so someone's got to pay for me. Okay. Someone has to pay me for my toll. Someone has to pay me for my gas. I'll be top of the whole day's salary. Someone's got to pay me for my schar batol. I could be doing something else. I don't have to be a rabbi in a shiva. I could be going to business. So people have to pay me for my training, whatever the case may be. So when a rabbi or a rav or a poysik is paid, so he's not paid the terrorist the avodah itself. He's paid for all the side things. He's paid for all the tangential parts of the job. The job itself is kedush kedush, and the job itself is mani b'chinim after b'chinim. Anyone know any other kind of job like that?
A little bit of curry is preparing, other things, some is getting paid for that also.
Could be.
Curry is other problems, he's paid for shops, but it's a whole different problem. Anyone got any other ideas? What other jobs are there out there which have the same problem? They can't get paid for. That's chashabs, you mentioned, right? What other kinds of professions? Right. Doctors not allowed to get paid either. For the same reason. Because the Gemara says in Mechoros that just as you're not allowed to get paid for teaching Torah, you're not allowed to get paid for any other mitzvah that you do. Mitzvahs you do for free. The Gemara shall pay you for the mitzvahs. So comes the halacha and says that a doctor's also not allowed to get paid for being a doctor. So what's he allowed to get paid for? The same story. He's allowed to get paid. He can get paid for his schar batal because he's doing something else. He's allowed to get paid for to pay off his medical school bills. He's allowed to get paid to cover his malpractice insurance bills. He's allowed to get paid to pay his office staff. But for the act of refu itself, that's a mitzvah d'oraisa. There's a mitzvah for a doctor to heal a patient. The Hashivosala, the Gemara says, if there's a mitzvah to return a person's lost object, Chavad is a mitzvah to return a person's lost body. So when a doctor does the actual treating of a patient, that's a mitzvah, the araisa, and he's not allowed to get paid for.
So how can Shul sometimes charge for Rosh Hashanah
Yom Kippur? For what? They're charging for the rights to be able to buy a seat. You don't need a seat to daven, you can stand there also. So you want to be more comfortable? So you have to pay for that. How can a doctor not allow to return my patient? So it is critical that when a person is involved in these kinds of things, these various Kurdish types of things, so we want it to be the most purity of motive, we want everything to be perfect. We don't want there to be anything clouding the person's vision. We don't want there should be shaykha, we don't want there should be wine, we don't want there to be any salaries, nothing. The person paskins ma'ani b'chinam, ha'pa b'chinam. In fact, it was an issue that was raised in the post-community, 500 years ago or so, of the following practice that existed in Jewish communities, that the Masada get, a couple has to come get divorced, so it takes the Masada as a get, the dying is in charge of the get, it takes them a while, it takes them a couple of hours, till they get all the questions, you get right up the get, you have a cipher, you take a few hour process. So the dying's got to get paid, he's got to make, got to feed his family. So the practice was they would pay the Masada a get X amount of money. So the Bartanura, the Ravadji Bartanura, what he writes, famous parish of Mishnayas, Ravadji Bartanura, so he has a comment in the Mishnayas and the Sechat Bechairis where the halachas appear of not getting paid for doing mitzvahs. He writes, it's a terrible, terrible practice that he knows exists in certain communities, that the Rabbanim, that the Dayanim were involved in authorizing Gittin, they get paid. He said, it's terrible, it's horrible, we should do away with it. That's, because it disqualifies the entire get. Because the Mishnah says that a noble scholar, the din of betalim, if a person gets is a dying and he sits on a dintar and he gets paid for it, so whatever he says is batel mavuto. So says the Batanura, if a person is getting paid for it, he's decided to get. You know what happens to the get? The get is batel, he gets pasul, gavalt. So comes the Raman, and he says, nah, we don't pass like that. We pass in the day and we're allowed to get paid. You know why? Says the Raman. When a dying is doing a get, he's not a dayan. Remember, like we spoke about dayanim earlier on, a couple of shiurim ago, a dayan passing a shaila, Isaac Bezdin, says the Ramah, the dayan's not a dayan. He's just doing the paperwork. He's doing the seder a get. He's filling out the form. That's not passing a shaila. Is that a poisek? So says the Ramah, he's getting paid for his time, he's getting paid for his work, that's not a problem. So the Ramah defends the practice of the Dayanim, he's getting paid for this. So I call upon him, you see from this whole discussion in the poskim, we have to be careful, we pass in Shilas, we want to teach Torah, so we want everything to be authentic, we want everything to be pure, and there shouldn't be any possible Megiyas, the double one's
fine. This Mahogany I mentioned when you're speaking about before, about how it's going off, like this has to be Mahogany or something at the end, and then he should keep it. So wouldn't even if it's not like a typical halacha, so wouldn't that like create like disturb the like Sora? Because some people would be like they're like obviously we said that there are more things that you get in this year of mine. There's still a lot of things that people have machlokas about.
Right.
So isn't that like
unfortunately machlokas is something that we live in an era of post Beis and Agadol, so we can't resolve many machlokas, and that's why we have such a balagan with machlokas in Kadesh. Because in the olden days, what was supposed to happen, what did happen for many hundreds of years, was that machlokas arose, and then they got to the Beis and they got resolved.
So in Echanam, you're right. That I'm going to say it distorts the Masoret, adds confusion to the Masoret. There's no question about it. But that's the, we have no choice. That's part of Galus. That's part of the onus that we're in right now. There is one other area with the Rishonim discuss in terms of a Rav, not just the Dayan, the Poisek, being careful about, that sometimes you have a situation where a Rav, a Poisek, has an Negiyah B'davar. He has something to gain. He has some ulterior motive, perhaps, to paskin a shayla in a certain way. And is that something that's problematic? And we know, of course, let's say in the realm of Eidos, or the realm of Beis Din, so if the witnesses have an ulterior motive, they're no Negev Adavas, or Negev Adavas possible to be an Eid. Or a Vedayan is a Negev Adavas, let's say he has a share in this company or something, so he's possible to be a Dayan. So we have to be so, so careful that the Gemara Sugis in the third Rebbe of Asra, that we bend over backwards to figure out whether the guy has any Negev whatsoever, he has any interest in the case, he can't serve on the case. Give me an Eid, give me that. I remember Vice Israel Lahab. I was once on a jury duty, so it was very, you know, it was a very unexciting case. About in the end, they bumped me off the case. I didn't even sit on the case. But in the preview to the case, so it was some case. A guy had a hearing aid. He had ordered, and the hearing aid went bad, and he claims that it is affecting his hearing, and he's suing the company. And so, some money's like really, really fascinating, cases. You'd love to sit up for 2 weeks. The guy's screaming at the hearing aid company. So when the judge was trying to figure out who's going to sit on this jury, so he lines all of us up, and he asks us, okay, he asks us the following question: do any of you have hearing aids? Do any of you parents have hearing aids? Do any of you work for a hearing aid company? Do any of you ever had an issue with a hearing aid company? So 30,000 questions to see whether we have any negiyah b'davar cues in this particular case. In effect, this is mamash halacha, and he's right. It means, let's say a guy has a hearing aid and he has a negiyah b'davar because this affects him also. So in the chenali, so he's not a possible to be a dayan, he's not a possible to be an aid. So what about in the realm of Psach Aloch? Forget about Tayyamas, forget about Eidim. Can a Rav pass get a Shaila that he's an Negev Adavar? So what would be the ultimate case of an Negev Adavar? It's his own Shaila. Every Shaila comes up in my kitchen, I'll give out a little bit of milk, fell into a pot of chicken soup, and I'm trying to pass it as a mutter, as it also. It's my chicken soup. And my wife's standing there, it's Friday afternoon, and I know that she wants me to pass it mutter. Am I allowed to pass in the Shaila? What do I have to defer? I have to ask another Rav. I have to say, listen, I can't pass in the Shaila because I'm a Negev Adavar. Is there such a Allah? So by the Yad of the Rishach Allah, by Eidim, there's such a Allah. So a lot of this discussion revolves around the story that appears in the second paragraph of Maseches Nit, the very end of the second paragraph of Maseches Nit. There is a halacha, need just a little bit of a background. There's a halacha that because of a woman bleeds, a woman gets a period, she bleeds, so she becomes a nida, she becomes a bustanei, she becomes a surah labayla. The halacha is that not all kind of blood that a woman experiences is necessarily considered to be halachically dam nida. And a critical component in terms of Uchas Nida is the color of the blood. The blood, we know, usually is red, but every once in a while you can have blood that's a little bit of an off shade red, a little bit of pinkish, a little bit brownish, blackish, different shades somewhat of the way the blood is presenting itself. And there are very, very technical halachas, midah araisa, what's considered to be what's called dam tame, what's considered to be dam tahar. And sometimes the blood is a problem in halacha, and sometimes it's not a problem in halacha. In fact, the Torah in Parsha Shoftim, when it introduces us to Parsha Beit and Agadol, the Torah says, Ki pole mimcha davar la-mishpat. And so that's Lazar. And then Lazar. Bein dam l'dam. What does that mean, bein dam l'dam? Something more in Sanhedrin. Bein dam tor l'dam tomer. It's going to be a shayla that's going to come up. What do you do? Is this blood tomi? Is this blood tor? Is the woman tomei? She asur? Or she's the Torah's kabbal? She asur l'bayla? Shayla b'slep is manazeh. So the Gemara is all sugyas, all mishnah in the second part of Nida, all sugyas b'zman. As that, Rav was trained in this area of halacha, so he spends a lot of time looking at different, what's called different maros, different shailas that women will bring to see, is this dam really tummy, is this dam really tar? Again, not very, very serious shailas, that with mice and b'chol yom, these kinds of shailas. So the Gemara tells the story of the second barakah Maseches Nida, that Rav Nachman's wife, do you know her name? Ibikias? No, it's Rivea's wife. Nachman, fourth paragraph of Kiddush, I remember? Yalta was there. So, the Gemara says she was very, very smart. She had a learning, but also the Gemara tells some things about her. So, Rav Nachman's Rebbe in Yalta once had a Shaila, she had a Shaila of a Dam, and she wanted to show the shaila to one of the rabbanim. So she brought the shaila to the rabbi, the besmenish. She asked him a shaila and a chasmid, whatever he said. He said, didn't say whatever. It doesn't matter for us the purposes right now. So comes Tosfos and Agamar and asks the most obvious question. What's the most obvious question? Why does she ask Rav Nachman? Rav Nachman has to go on the door. Why does she have to go running to the besmenish? That's Tosfos' kasha. So Tosfos gives you a few answers. Once, first of all, Tosfos says, you know what? Maybe Rav Nachman has such good eyesight. In order to pass in a shaila and a chznida, in order to pass in what's called a mara shaila, so it's not enough just to know the halacha. You have to have good eyesight. You have to be able to tell. Sometimes you have older rabbanim who won't look at maros because their eyes aren't up to par. And a particular chaver chashver rab, colleague of mine who's colorblind, says, colorblind. You can't pass in a shaila and a chznida. What can you do? You can pass in other shaila and a chznida. You can't look at dam. So Tosfos says, "Kasha l'maisa, why Rav Nachman didn't look at the dam? I don't know why. He didn't know how to look at the dam. His eyes were bothering, whatever it was." Then Tosfos gives another interesting answer. Tosfos says, "Maybe Rav Nachman didn't want to look at the dam. Maybe Yalta didn't want to show her husband the dam because she was afraid he would be too machmer on himself. Because the shadow was relevant for him. He would shake. He would sit. He wouldn't be willing to say what the ikra halacha was. He would be too machmer. So she wanted to show somebody else. Whatever it was." Tosfos gives very, very technical reasons why. So the Rash, the Rashes that are made a Shimshon, one of the Balei Tosfos, he besides being quoted in Tosfos very often, he wrote two unbelievable Chiburim, two unbelievable works. Went on what? Rash, Perisha Rash and Mishnayas of Zeroim and Taharos. So the Rashes, you can't learn Zeroim without the Rash, but the Taharos have the Rash, the aside of Mishnayas. So the Rash, in his Perisha Mishnah, it suggests a new answer to Tosfos' case. Says the Rash, it would appear to him that the reason why Rav Nachman would not look at the dam, the shaila of his own wife, is because he was an agabedover. When you're an agabedover, you can't pass the shaila. So according to the Rash, it's an unbelievable chumrah. This guy can't pass his own kasher shaila, Shabbos shaila. Very, very strange. So Lamaisa, we don't pass like the Rash. We paskin that a person can paskin his own shaila. A person has to obviously be honest to himself to know when he's qualified to paskin and whatnot, and he has to be honest to the Rebbe Shalom that he's paskining, you know, without ulterior motives. But even though there is a halacha that a dayan or an aid can't be an agavadavar, but a rav, a person can be an agavadavar. There's one exception to the rule, though. The Gemara tells us that what if you have a shaila that comes from the Beis Medrash? And all of a sudden, from left field, somebody walks in, a rov walks in and says, "Ah, I'm telling you, this is the halacha." And everyone says, "What? That's the halacha? No, that's such a chiddush. It can't be. You're not right." And he says, "No, I'm telling you, that's the halacha." He says something which is a zam chiddush tikkadin that nobody thought of before. So says the Gemara, if he has some kind of an igiyah bedavar, then you have to shake a little bit. Then you have to be nervous a little bit. If a rov walks in, a tamchaka walks in and tells you a chiddush gadol, if he doesn't have any negiyah b'davar, he doesn't have any personal gain, so then we trust him wholeheartedly. But if he has a personal gain, and it's something which sounds to us like it's a little bit shaky, so then we have to think twice before we're going to accept what he says. So yes, we do accept, we assume that people generally speaking are honest in terms of psach halacha, but if it's something that looks a little bit shaky to us, then we're going to be a little extra careful to make sure that nothing seeps into the Mesira that can chalila v'chalila corrupt authenticity of the Mesira. So a part of you see from these halachas, what were these halachas? The halachas of the dayanim taking money, and the halachas of the sheikhan and getting paid, and the drinking, and then the giyah b'davar. All these halachas, you see how important it is that we want there to be emes in Torah. We want the Mesira, the Teshuva Pet, to remain emes l'amitah. So I thought just in the remaining time, we have a little bit more time, but tonight and the next week we have a little bit. Sunday night is next Sunday night, then I think Tuesday night having some kind of special something or other, program or something, and Wednesday I'm going back already, I'm leaving already Wednesday night, so I have one or two more shiurim, that's it. So I thought we'd just speak a little bit, you know, somewhat of an overview of Torah Shabbat Peh in the following sense. So Baruch Hashem, we spent really the bulk of the summer talking about Torah Shabbat Peh. We spoke at the beginning of the summer about the different the components of Torah Shabbat Peh, and then we spoke historically about the development of Torah Shabbat Peh. And now the last couple of shiur we spoke about the role of Psach Halacha and the role of the Posek and then the authenticity of the Mesorah. So I wanted to speak just a little bit in terms of Torah Shabbat Peh, but specifically in terms of the differences and distinctions between Torah Shabbat Peh and Torah Shabbat Peh. So we know, of course, there are two halachim of Torah Torah, the Tashem Ksav, the Tashem Apeh, and they do complement one another, but there are differences between the two. There are some very real halachic and machshava differences between the Tashem Ksav and Tashem Apeh that we spend a little bit of time talking about. If I'm not mistaken, I think the first thing we spoke about, the very first day, we mentioned that the Rambam writes that one of the Yid Gimli Kari Amuna is Moshe Kibbutz Torah Sinai, that Zosa Torah Metziah to be Adenu, he had Metziah Nasidu Moshe Benu Avashalom, and the Torah that we have today is word for word verbatim the Dvar Hashem. That is true for the Torah Shabbat. It's true in a certain sense for the Torah Shabbat Peh, but not in the same way. What do I mean by that? When it comes to Tashem Ksav, so we believe in Emunah Shleimah that the Rebbeinu Shlom dictated verbatim, word for word, letter for letter, to Moshe Rabbeinu. When it comes to Tashem HaPeh, so we believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu transmitted the concepts of the Tashem HaPeh to Moshe Rabbeinu, but not necessarily the wording that we use today. It means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't necessarily say to Moshe Rabbeinu, okay, Me'emas HaKarna Shema Ba'arvis. He may have discussed with him the mitzvah Krishma, but he didn't use those terms. Me'emas HaKarna Shema Ba'arvis are the words of Rida Nasi, or whatever Rabbeinu Rida Nasi, whoever was the Tana who originally put those words into being. Or Shnayim Echse Betal, Zeni Amitza Siya, Zeni Amitza Siya. The Rebbeinu Shalom didn't say those words to Moshe Rabbeinu. The Rebbeinu Shalom taught Moshe Rabbeinu the halachas of Matzah Mechavel Avaraya. And he taught Moshe Rabbeinu what he do when you have a Suffolk Mammon. And he taught Moshe Rabbeinu the halachas of Shavuos. And now, the Tanayim, in the day before the Tanayim, somewhere between the days of Moshe Rabbeinu and the days of Rida Nasi, so those words came into being. That lingo, the Shnayis, the Gemaras, is Lashainis of Basav Adam, which are expressing the concepts of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he was Moshe to Moshe Rabbeinu. So Tashem Ksav and Tashem HaPeh are very different in that sense. That means they're both term Misinai, no question about it. But whereas Tashem Ksav is the words themselves, Misinai, Tashem HaPeh are the concepts of Misinai. How does this play out in Misa? How does this practical difference between these two different components of Torah? So the Shulchan Harav, who remembers from last week, the Shulchan Harav? First Bab Shirev, Baal Tanya. So the Shulchan Aruch Rav wrote in Yeridaya a whole kuntras on Hilchos Talmud Torah. So in his kuntras on Hilchos Talmud Torah, the Shulchan Aruch Rav raised the following shaila. What's the halacha in the following case? A guy opens up a chumash. What is this? A chumash? Good, perfect. Guy opens up a chumash and he starts to read. The Sarat Svaradim Imchob Mevatech 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 Mevatech. He doesn't understand the word of Hebrew. He doesn't understand. He doesn't know what it's about. He doesn't know what mibatech. He doesn't know anything. He doesn't understand. He knows how to read. But he doesn't understand the word. Just like my little one, Abim Zeb. He's 6 years old. He could read this puzzle. He wouldn't understand the word of what the puzzle means. Yeah, another sefer. That was up to Mishnah. He knows how to read. He doesn't have a clue what any of these words mean. Is that a mitzvah Talmud Torah? Such an individual fulfill the mitzvah of Talmud Torah by just mumbling the words without any havana, any understanding whatsoever. So comes the Shulchan Aruch Rav and says, "Petosh v'chsav, yes, petosh v'chsav, no." Why? What's the svara? What's the svara l'chalik? According to what we said before, petosh v'chsav are intrinsically different Torah. They're intrinsically Dvar Hashem and Kedusha. They're intrinsically the Dvar Hashem. So I'm learning the Torah Hashem. I'm not learning it to the best of my ability. I'm not understanding it. It's a problem. No, we don't understand it. It's going to be a big problem. But Afa Pichain, a person is still considered to be learning when he's reading the words of Torah Shabbat. Torah Shabbat as garnish is nothing. There's no Kedusha to the words Batei Chatzeirim. Batei Chatzeirim are a human being's terms of a representation of a concept that's divine, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Moshe and Moshe Rabbeinu. If you don't grasp the concept, if you don't understand what the words themselves are meaningless, it's the concept that's important. If you don't understand the concept, that's not a mitzvah of Talmud Torah. That's one interesting distinction between Torah Shabbat and Torah Shabbat, which emanates from the fundamental difference as to what we mean when we say that Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misinai. When we speak about Torah Shabbat, so what exactly makes up Torah Shabbat? So the Chamisha Chumash Torah is obviously Torah Shabbat. Is there any other part of Torah Shabbat? So Nevi'im Ksuvim is a toughie. Nevi'im Ksuvim, yes, it's Miksav, that's true. Is that when we use the halachic term Torah Shabbat, does it include Nevi'im Ksuvim? We usually assume that it does. There is a fascinating machloikis in the Ram and the Raivid in the end of Hilchas Megillah about the status of the Vim of Ksuvim Rasa Lava. Anyone know the machloikis? The Rabbim writes that the Rasa Lava in years to come, when Mashiach comes, so the Vim of Ksuvim will cease to exist. It will not be anymore the Vim of Ksuvim anymore. That's going to be much smaller. Why not? So the Rambam based himself. Mara says, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu give the Nevi'im Maksub in the class? What do you need the Nevi'im for? What do you need Sefer Shemuel for? What do you need Sefer Yemiyah for? So the Gemara says, Barov Chochma Rav Kas, that because HaKadosh Baruch was angry at us, because we did Chatoim, so he constantly gives us Musar, he's sending more and more Nevi'im to correct us. Why do we have a whole Sefer Yemiyah? Because we're a Chaytah, it was a Chorban, that wouldn't have been a Chorban, that wouldn't have been another Yemiyah. There wouldn't have been problems. We wouldn't have needed to share one another. He'd come and give us Musar and Shabbos Chazal. So comes the Rambam and says that in this world, we're still being chayte. We need the Divrei Hanaviim. We need the Divrei Ksuvim. We need Mishlei. We need Iyov. We need these Svarim, Kahelas, to give us Chizuk, to be Ma'aros, the Tshuva. We also love him. We also have a Sheikh. Says, there'll be no need for them. Everyone's going to be Chizuk with Tshuva anyway. Kimalad, Zdeas, Hashem, Tiyar, Ma'am, Liyam, Chasim. There won't be any need for the Nevi'im Ksuvim, so they will cease to exist. They will no longer be part of Torah. That's what the Rambam writes. It's a Chiddush. With one exception, there's only one sefer in the Nevi'im Ksuvim that will remain the other poem. Megillas Esther. Says the Pasuk, "V'zichron Yosef Mizarim." So comes the Rabbi and says, "Chas v'shalom," that the Nevi'im Ksuvim are going to be erased from the Tanakh. He says they're part of the Torah. The Torah is never going to be changed. They're part of Torah Shmuchsav. So what does Chazal mean when they say that a kol haksuv matzidim libatel? The Rambam didn't make it up. The Gemara says that in the future, days to come, once Mashiach, all the ksuvim, all the nevim ksuvim will cease to exist. Says the Raiv, it doesn't mean they're going to cease to exist. It means no one's going to bother learning them anymore. Of course they're going to exist. Of course they're going to be on the shelf. Of course they're going to be part of the Tanakh. But we're not going to read them anymore. You know why? Because there's no need. The same way, Yasud Lava. You won't need Mesil Shasharim either. You won't need Shai Chub either. You won't have to read Moses from Yasud Lava. Everyone's going to be Gavalik at Sadiq. Everyone's going to sit here learning Yom Balayla. So you're not going to need anything to correct yourself. You'll be able to be Chayz Bachuba without any help. So comes the Rabbi and says, but to say that the Nevi'im Ksuvim are going to disappear, so the Rabbi says, that's impossible. How can the Torah Kadosh, how can any chelek, any portion of Torah Kadosh disappear? So you see, it's interesting, and it seems to be a machlokes in the Rambam and the Rabbi. What do we mean when we use the terms Torah Shebichsav? Torah Shebichsav, according to the Rambam, is very, very limited to referring just to Chamish Kumshi Torah. And according to the Rabbi, no, the Torah Shebichsav means the entire Tanakh is called Torah Shebichsav. Enough Kamina, not sure what you said this, but maybe enough Kamina, but for right now, we're gonna put that on the side. This idea that besides the Torah Shebichsav and the Chamish Chamshi Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us other Kisvei HaKodesh, he gave us Nevi'im, and he gave us Ksuvim. So one could raise the following question. We know one of the Yigimli Kari Amun is also, we believe that the Nevu'ah was given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Nevi'im. Moshe Rabbeinu is of course the Adonai Nevi'im, the ultimate Navi, but other Nevi'im also exist. So that's your Shaila. Divrei Yirmiyahu ben Chilkiyahu, the words of Yirmiyahu and Navi, those words, were they written by HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Were they dictated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Yirmiyahu? The words of every single Nevu'ah, so we're going to wrap to read in Shem Shabbos, Chazol Nishayahu ben Amoz. So Yishayahu starts, Panim Gidalti Vermont Vehem Pashubi. Who is speaking? Who is saying those words? Is that Kadosh Baruch Hu saying those words? He gave it to Yirmiyahu, Yishayahu, Petarus Nevu'ah, those words, word for word, verbatim, like he gave the Torah Kadesh to Moshe Rabbeinu. Or perhaps one can argue that the only time that we say that the words are the words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are only about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in Nevi'im Ksuvim, the concept was given to the Navi. There is HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Yirmiyahu HaNavi a Mara. He showed him a vision. He showed him something. Gave him a dream. He showed him some kind of a Mara HaNavuah. And now HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Yirmiyahu, look at this Mara HaNavuah and describe to me what you're seeing. Ma Tarei Yirmiyahu. Put it into words. But the words are your human words. So that's a big machlokes. That's machlokes mefarshim on Nach. How do we understand the Nevi'im and Ksuvim, when they dictated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at least the words of Nevu'ah, when the Nevi'im, were they dictated verbatim by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or was the Mara HaNevu'ah given, the concept was given, and Avi Novi put his own words into the picture. So this distinction, even that we find, even within the Torah Shebichsav perhaps, so between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebichsav, for sure it's true. The Torah Shebichsav, for sure the words weren't given to Moshe Rabbeinu, for sure the concepts were given, the words are human words. when she said shir also. So the question is, was that shir dictated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Those words came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Well, no, those were Baruch HaKadosh. She gets some divine inspiration and she said it, the Korach HaNavu, whatever that means. Okay? So in Maisa, there are very real differences between the Tosh HaSav and Tosh HaPeh. And the most basic fundamental difference between the Tosh HaSav and Tosh HaPeh is the Tzur, is the format, how we're supposed to preserve the two different parts of Torah. We spoke a little bit about this in a couple of Shirim ago, before we switched over halfway through the summer. So we mentioned that the Tosh HaPeh was Kishmok Kenu. Kenny, that it was supposed to be the Apeh. The original plan of the Rav Shlom was that it should remain the Rebbe Tam and Rebbe Tam, totally the Apeh. And of course that changed in the days of Rebbe Danossi, around that Kufa. It changed, the Chum in that generation realized that it's impossible. That Eis Lassos Hashem Aferos HaSechel, the Gemara says that if we're going to keep this halacha, so it'll be tantamount to forgetting the entire Torah. No one's going to remember the Torah anymore. So therefore, Nebuch, they were stuck, they had to write down the Torah. But writing down the Torah was a b'di'evet. So comes the Gemara in Gittin in the end of the fifth parak and tells us that just as the Torah Shirapeh is not supposed to be written down, so too, the Torah Shemachsav is not supposed to be said by Alpeh. That there's supposed to be differences between the two. Alpeh is supposed to remain the Alpeh. Mechsav is supposed to remain the Mechsav. It's based on this, the Gemara's Halacha, that Devar Shemachsav, Iyat HaRosh HaMamun the Alpeh. That the Torah Shemachsav is supposed to remain the Mechsav. You're not supposed to say over the Divrei Torah, the Alpeh. What does that mean exactly? As we'll say over the Divrei Torah, the Alpeh, the Torah Shemachsav, the Alpeh.
That, like, if you're walking in, like, girls,
So let's say the basic halacha sounds like, that if a person wants to say a pasuk Shema Yisrael, it's not allowed to say it. He's got to read it, even mitoch haSefer Torah mamish, or at least mitoch haChumash, siddur or something. He's got to say it mitoch haKsav. He cannot just say a pasuk Malkeh. Which led all the Rishayim to the following obvious question. We do this all the time. We say Shema all the time b'alpeh. We read Duchen b'alpeh. We say Berachas HaTorah with Yirvech Hashem Shemecha b'alpeh. We say Pashas HaTomid b'alpeh. Ma'isim b'chol yom. Everybody says Pesukim b'alpeh. What kind of halach is this? How can the Gemara say with a straight face that the Devarim Shemechsav Iyat HaRosh HaLeom b'alpeh? There is the halach. How can there be such a halach? So comes Tosfos and says that Isser of Devarim Shemechsav Iyat HaRosh HaLeom b'alpeh. All it means is as follows, that the Torah wants to make sure that we don't corrupt the Torah Shemachsav. What's the best way to corrupt something? If you say Be'alpeh, if you don't bother to look up in a siddur, you don't look for a chumash, so you'll say the pasuk, you pronounce something wrong, you'll say the wrong word, you'll miss a word, you'll forget a word, and then you'll forget what the Torah says, and the next person who hears you will make a mistake, will have a game of broken telephone. So the Torah wanted to make sure that doesn't happen. Therefore the Torah is not bid that the Torah Shemachsav have to remain Tavka Bechsav. Therefore, Tosfos writes, what if you have a pasuk or a series of psukim that there's no such fear? Every person, every Jew in the world, every observant Jew in the world knows this pasuk b'alpeh. Says Tosfos, then he doesn't know. What's the end? What's the prototype of such a pasuk? Obviously, Shema Yisrael says Tosfos, everybody knows Shema b'alpeh. Therefore, you're allowed to say Shema b'alpeh. Everybody knows Yivrech Hashem Yishmerecha b'alpeh. So Zion, you say Yivrech Hashem Yishmerecha b'alpeh. I'm going. Everyone knows Pashas Atama b'alpeh. Maybe not. Hopefully they should. So it comes to us and says that those pesukim which are shkur b'viyakol, there's no issur of Torah Shemachsav or Torah Shemachsav. So according to Tosfos, there's nothing intrinsically that the Torah really cares that the chsav should remain the chsav. So it's a safeguard, just to make sure that people don't make a mistake. So when the safeguard doesn't really apply, it's shkur b'viyakol, then it's going to be okay. So hopefully mitzvah next year, we'll discuss a little bit more about this halacha and see whether maybe a whole different understanding of this halacha. This may really get to the root of differences between Torah Shemachsav and Torah Shemachsav.